Avos Perik Vav Mishnah Vav. And some Mishnahs it's Vav Hey. And this is a very famous Mishnah if you moved in Eshet Torah circles, where I became from once upon a time, 37 years ago. And Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal the Rosh Yeshiva built Eshet Torah as the entranceway into Eshet Torah, attracting non-observant Jews through a lecture series called the 48 Ways to Wisdom, which is built on this particular Braisa. He actually has 50 lectures built on this one Braisa. We, of course, will do it in one, but there's a lot to say over here. The Mishnah starts out, the Braisa starts out by saying, G'dola Torah Yosre mena Kahuna umena Malchus. Torah is greater than Kahuna, priesthood, and Malchus, kingship. Now, you'll recall earlier on in the fourth parak, there were three crowns, three ksarim, which are the keser, the crowns of the Malchus and the Kahuna, as well as the keser Torah. So here we're going to talk about those three areas of, I'll call it, authority in Jewish life, in Torah life. And we're saying here that the Torah, those who wear the crown of Torah, so to speak, are greater than those who have embraced or embody Kahuna as a Kohen, as a priest, or Malchus as a king. So the Mishnah first starts out by saying that Shamalchus Niknas Beshloshim Malus, there are 30 distinguishing features that a king enjoys relative to other people. The word Niknas here, which means to be acquired, does not appear in most early versions of this Braisa. It is definitely present in most printed versions today, but most early manuscripts do not have it in, and it's much easier to understand if you take that word out, so we're going to leave it out. We're saying there are 30 distinguishing features of a king relative to regular people. V'kahuna be'esrim v'arba, and there are 24 distinguishing features that a Kohen has over a regular non-Kohen. V'hatorah niknas ba'arbaim u'shmona devarim. But the Torah, which you can't just earn by birth, the king can be born into being a king and the Kohen can be born into be a Kohen, but if you want to wear the Keser Torah, the crown of Torah, you have to earn it. And it's earned through 48 different ways, Arbim Vishmona Devarim. And these 48 ways that make a person who is wearing the Keser Torah distinguished from regular people in these 48 ways. So the point of the Mishnah for starters is that Torah is a more exalted state when he wears the Keser Torah, the crown of Torah, because he is distinguished from regular people in 48 ways, verse 30 for a king and 24 for a Kohen. What this is talking about here, I'm not going to go into it in detail now, but when it comes to the Kohanim, the 24, so basically there are 24 essentially gifts that Kohanim get that other people can't enjoy. 10 are in the Mikdash, like the meat that you get from the different animal sacrifices that they can enjoy in the Chatzer where other people can't. There are 10 total things there that are essentially foodstuffs they can enjoy. There are 4 additional things that are consumed and enjoyed in Yerushalayim, including like a bechor, including other kachim kalim things, you know, bikurim, and so on. And then you have another 10 gifts that the Kohanim are given throughout Eretz Yisrael, truma gadola, chala, as well as some other more obscure things like charmei kohanim and so on. But if you add up, there are 24. As far as kings go, so some learn that it's material things, as a Kohen enjoys certain material gifts, so too the king enjoys material gifts, and then essentially learning out from Psukim and Koheles, as well as Psukim and Shmuel, and in Devarim, there are like 30 things that a king has which are special to him. Others learn that the distinguishing features both by the Kohanim and the kings have to do with like essentially special halachas that apply to them. So in the Kohanim, it's sort of one and the same. They enjoy Truma, and the Pasuk gives them the mitzvah of enjoying Truma. The king then would be other kinds of special mitzvahs that we had in Maseches Sanhedrin, you have in Chumash Devarim, you have in Sefer Shmuel, that makes special things about kings in terms of like dinim. Whatever the case is, that you can see the lists of them, but I'm not going to go into it now at all. But the Torah is niknis ba'arvim b'shmona devarim. The Torah has 48, and they can be acquired, and a person who is serious about wearing the crown of Torah has to acquire them. I have to tell you very briefly an amazing Maharal in Derech Chaim. He basically says there are 3 kalim, utensils, that are in the Beis HaMikdash, which symbolize these 3 crowns. These are 3 kalim that actually have a zer, a crown on them. One is the Shulchan, one is the Mizbeach HaZahav, and one is the Aron, the Aron. So the Shulchan, the table in which the showbreads are put, has a zer, it has a crown on it, around it, and it symbolizes the Malchus, the king, because it's essentially putting bread there. It's as the king's role for the nation is to provide the material well-being for the people. And the highest special avoda is the but done twice a day in the Kodesh inside of the sanctuary in the Heichal there, the Ketores offering, which is done on the Mizbeach HaZahav, that symbolizes the avoda that the Kohanim do on behalf of the people. And the Mizbeach HaZahav also has a zer, has like a crown around it. And you have the Aron, that's of course in the Kodesh Kedoshim, that is the repository where the Luchos Abris, the tablets that from Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ten Commandment tablets, are kept. It symbolizes, of course, the Torah. And it has a crown as well as there, and that is symbolizing the Keser Torah. Now, if you act, the Maral speaks out, if you figure out the perimeter of these like utensils in two dimensions, in Tfachim, it works out that the Mizbeach HaZahav is essentially one Amma by one Amma, and there's six Tfachim in an Amma, so it's six by six, so it's basically six plus six plus six plus six, gives you the 24 Tfachim, connected to 24 Milas of the Kohen. The Shulchan, two of its dimensions and perimeter, you essentially have 1.5 and one Amma, so 1.5 plus one is 2.5, and double that with the other two gets you to five Amos in perimeter. Five times six Tfachim per Amma gives you 30 Tfachim, and that's 30 Milas. And the Aron, it is 1.5 by 2.5, so you figure 1.5 plus 2.5 gives you four, and then another double that all the way around gives you eight Amos around. 8 times 6 is 48, so 48 Tfachim around, that's the crown of the Aron, and that symbolizes the Keser of Torah. So that's a remarkable Maral. More over there you can see. In any case, so here we're going to talk about, if you want to get your Keser of Torah, you need 48 things. Now, when it says Niknis, Niknis means to acquire. Now, a normal Kinyan is a binary event where this object belongs to me or doesn't belong to me based on whether or not a Kinyan was done. So you have a car, you're transferring it to me. Until the Kinyan is done, it's your car and 0% mine. After the Kinyan is done, it's 100% mine and 0% yours. So it's a total transfer. Here, in terms of the Kinyanim of Torah, we're not saying that if you do one or all of these, all of a sudden the Torah is entirely yours, so to speak. But the point is, they're like sort of a partial steps, like binding agents, which connect you to the Torah. So if you want to be connected to the Torah, so each one of these 48 tools are ways by which you will make yourself a fitting receptacle to receive the Torah and connect to the Torah and thereby connect to Hashem. And therefore, in total, these 48 different kinyanim will transform you into sort of the Adam HaShalom, like a perfected person, where you'll be able to bond with the Torah and therefore bond with Hashem himself. So that's what we're working on here. It's a matter of degrees, and we're trying to essentially do our very best to realize as many as possible. All of them is not possible, of course, but everyone has to try their very best. And lo lecha melacha ligmor, you can't do it all, but you got to focus on best you can. Okay, so what are they? So the first of them is betalmud, with study. Now, betalmud here means, I assume that when Rabbi Yudasi said it, he just first and foremost meant showing up to class. They had a shiur every day, participate in the shiur, learn. Okay, you're not going to get Torah if you don't learn Torah. Of course, that's first and foremost. Now, the Mefarshim now focus on the fact that it has to be learning specifically from a Rebbe as opposed from just Sfarim, okay? Because a Rebbe ensures that you don't make mistakes, understand things correctly, and so on. But Rav Noach's approach and many other Mefarshim's approach is this is about orienting your life towards being a learner, lifelong learning. And therefore, you should have this like attitude of being constantly learning. There's so much learning, you'll never get to the end of it, of course. And when one learns, when one is in a posture, a mental posture, I need to learn all the time, that means he's showing he has a desire for learning and that he's admitting he's lacking something. He needs to fill that gap with the knowledge he doesn't know yet. And therefore, that sort of impels him to learn more and learn better. Okay? So the point here then, therefore, essentially to seek to constantly be learning more Torah and every way you can to grow and grow without stopping. There's also an approach, this is specifically about Talmud, as in like, think of it, so to speak, as Talmud Bavli. Now, obviously, meaning the type of learning that's in Talmud Bavli. Now, obviously, the Bavli hadn't been written for another 250 years after the finishing of the Mishnah. So we're not talking about read the book called Talmud Bavli, but the action, the activity, the type of learning that involves essentially thinking about and dissecting Mishnayos and comparing and contrasting them and extrapolating from them and making diuking from them, applying them. So that process is called Talmud. And we're saying here to be participating in that activity, as is memorialized by a collection of all those learnings that were done in the Babylonian yeshivas over the next couple centuries. That's in the Talmud Bavli. So that's Talmud. Then you have b'shmias ha'ozen, with listening of the ear. A strange expression. First of all, why in the world would you listen not with your ear? What does that mean? What's the ear coming to tell you? So I think on level one, this simply means that you have to, when you don't just show up to shiur, that's step one, but two, to pay attention, to listen up and hear what the Rebbe has to say. Now, the reason why it says with your ear, said Rav Noach, is because when you listen so many times, it's more than just the mechanical taking in the words that you're hearing. It's your hearing what the other person is saying, but through the filter of what you expect them to say and what you want them to say and what you think they mean. So shmias ha'ozen means no, stop. First, take in the raw data with as your ears do, without filtering it through your mind, without thinking kashas and truths, and without thinking what they must mean to say. Take it on face value for what it is. Get the data, hear the information. And later on, you will process it, you will think about it, you will ask your kashas, that's later on. But first of all, just hear objectively what the person has to say, and listen intently. You know, really be eager to hear everything that there is to be said, because of course, your only access to information you don't already know is by listening to the people telling it to you. Okay, that's number two. Number three is aricha sfasaim, arrange it on your lips. Now, I think the pashup shot here would have been, after you hear what the rabbis say, essentially repeat it to yourself. So that means in your reviewing of what you've been hearing, so repeat it back with your own mouth. Now, arichas sfasaim is funny, not because so much of the lips, arranging your lips, but the arranging part. It could have said like something like hotzas sfasaim, you know, speak it out with your lips. Aricha, arrangement, like shulchan aruch, means be set. So the idea is, you know, when you tell your kid set the table, you want to pull your hair out when the kid takes a handful of knives and forks and throws it on the table. That's not all the knives and forks, the cutlery is on the table, but the table's not set. Set means everything's put in its proper place. So the idea is, after you've taken the data, make sure you have it clearly, meaning in your own mind. So you process it to the extent that you're able to speak it out in an arranged, organized way. Again, we're not asking kashas, we're not being critical here. We're just simply saying, have I got clear what I've heard? And have I got the whole picture before processing it. So again, Chazal are imagining you're actually going to repeat over out loud with your mouth what you learned. And there are many Chazals that point out the importance, the necessity of learning out loud. The Rambam posits it in Halacha and Per Gimel Halacha Yud Beis of Hilchos Talmud Torah. You got to learn with your speaking out loud. And if you learn out loud, you're going to remember it. If you read to yourself quietly, you're going to forget it. That's the Rambam posits. There's a famous Gemara of a Bruria kicking a student who was not reading out loud and so on. So you have to get into it with your whole body. So arichas v'saim, be able to articulate what you've learned in a way that's clear, and you say it out loud with your actual mouth, not just in your head, not just running it through in your mind. This is not what the Mishnah means, but as plan B, if you're not prepared to speak out loud to yourself and get things clear by articulating them with your mouth, plan B is at least do it with your pen, so you can write things down and write out the shiur. So you heard a shiur, you know, the Rav gave over shiur, you heard this shiur about the Memches Devarim, the 48 ways. So now repeat what you learn, at least on paper. And again, with aricha, arrange it clearly, not just a verbatim transcript, but at least say, there are 48 ways. This is the first, this is the second, this is the third. It should be arranged as such in an orderly way. Okay, in addition, when you're saying arichas v'sasayim, we're saying that it should be sort of on your lips all the time, meaning there's sort of a constancy to the review here. This is talking about chazara and processing what you've heard and learned. Okay, number four is bevinas halev. Bevinas halev means understanding of the heart. Now, the lev, to my mind, actually should be translated always as the mind, understanding of the mind. Here we're beginning to now process the information that we've heard and confirm we at least have the raw data. So now we're going to process it. That means some degree level of not just review, but like some critical thinking. Okay, so you're not just reviewing it, but you're reviewing it like as if for the first time. You're rethinking about what you've learned, thinking about it, okay? Analyzing it carefully. Do you understand it clearly? Do you have any kashas? There are some versions of the Brice which have the fifth of these being sichlas halev. Sichlas halev means something like, intelligence of the heart. So that would break down this process in two separate steps about essentially both analyzing and then a sort of criticizing, being critical. You could, if it's just one bina halev, it would be the two things together. So essentially think through what you have heard and as your understanding. Does it make sense? Does it contradict what you learned before? Does it ring true with your personal experience? What questions would you like to ask? So you're formulating that sort of critical process of analyzing and criticizing what you have been critical of, what you have learned. Okay, and that will essentially prevent yourself from lying to yourself, from fooling to yourself that you understand when really you don't understand it. If you think it through, you'll realize what isn't actually clear, getting those questions. Now, in some Mishnayos, including the Rav Noach's version, the next is, you have Tahara. Tahara means purity. In my Mishnayos, the word Tahara doesn't appear. Purity would mean that essentially, if you're going to be using these as like the, you know, the 48 ways in which you're cleaving to Torah, being bound to Torah, so a person needs to be Tahor. And Tahor can have two aspects to it, at least. Not two I'm going to focus on. But think, you know, when you talk about, you want to make a clean bond with something, you know, when you open the super glue, the instruction on the super glue says, before applying the super glue, clean the surface. There's no dust on it. That's step one. So I mean, you have a good, solid connection with nothing interposing. So Tahara is about having nothing that intercedes. You know, the Tuma, from my lesson, a Tuma is something that blocks, it intercedes. So Tahara could mean the most simple idea of simply, you know, you don't want to be Tamei, you want to be, and essentially means get your mind out the gutter, or whatever gutter you've been in, clean yourself off of that, so that you can make a proper connection to Hashem without the interposing stuff, all that garbage. But more generally, it means essentially clear your mind of unnecessary clutter in general. So, like, you know, we talked about the Adam ki yamos ba'ohel, he has to be like, you know, dead to the world when he's in the tent learning Torah. The idea here is clear your mind, make it tahor of everything else so that you can focus on the learning and get a connection, a solid focus and a solid chibur connection to what you're learning without any admixture, any side thoughts, any distractions. And go back to that later. Okay, the next in the Mishnah is Be'ema, and some have Be'ira, some have Ema and Yira as combined to one thing. Ema and Yira are a little different. One is referring essentially to fear, and one is referring more to like to reverence. Okay, now I'm going to say them together because sometimes they are lumped together in some versions here. Where there are two things of which you're essentially having Ema and Yira of. One is Hashem, and one is your teacher. And they're both important. You have to be afraid of, so to speak, of reverence and awe of Hashem, because this is serious business. You're engaging with His Torah. And the way you can think of it as having Ema and Yira on the Torah itself. The Shekhinah is with you when you learn, if you're learning properly, and you have to take it seriously. You're engaging in a sublime act. You're connecting to Hashem, having a, you know, access to the mind of Hashem, and the Shekhinah is Shri Alecha, but you have to be, only if you take it seriously, because I'll point out the same way that the Torah was revealed in Har Sinai with Ema and Yira and Reses, you know, trepidation, fear, awe. So too, a person when he learns has to take his learning seriously. Same goes with the Rebbe. The Rebbe has your source of your information. You have to take him seriously and revere him and be in awe of him. So you're not goofing around, joking around, not appropriate and not effective. It'll undermine your ability to receive Torah from him. There's a separate angle, I think, which is that the Torah ultimately is instructions for living, right? So if you are not taking the learning seriously, then you say, listen, what difference does it make if I get it exactly clear? You're going to end up doing the wrong thing. If you're learning Hilchos Shabbos and it gets a particular detail about, you know, Gozes, you don't learn exactly right. You won't know what to do when the hangnail is half on and half off. Can you pluck it off? Can you pluck it off? How can you pluck it off? You need to know the details. So therefore, you have to, you know, essentially take your learning seriously to know you'll have to know exactly what to do and how to do it. That's Ema and Yira. Then you have Ba'anava. Anava means humility. Now, humility means knowing exactly who you are and who you aren't. Not fooling yourself. It doesn't mean that you think you're lowly. It doesn't mean that you make yourself small. That's not what Anava is. You are realist about who you are. Now, obviously, Yachas, compared to Hashem, we're all small, of course. But it doesn't mean thinking of yourself as less than what you are. It means just knowing what you actually are. And the truth is, the human condition is we all have lots to learn. We all want to project that we're good and competent, but we know down in our heart of hearts, we know we're not that good and we're not that competent. We have lots of shortcomings and we have to fess up to them. If you're going to be learning, Chazal focused so many times that the premier midah, the most important attribute to have, is anava. Moshe Rabbeinu was the anav mikol adam. He was the most humble person, and therefore he was able to be the repository of kol Torah kul, of the whole Torah. Anava requires you to essentially say, listen, I have a lot to learn, I'm not perfect, I need to grow, I need this Torah, and therefore, that by overcoming your pride and admitting it, you'll be able to learn from everybody, you'll learn it with a cheshek, with a desire, because you have to do it, you'll give proper deference to your chavrusa, you'll admit when you're wrong, so you can get past all that stuff. And if you have those failures in anava, you'll be afraid to ask questions when you don't understand something. You'll be afraid to admit that you don't understand something. And therefore, it's going to hold you back. It's going to hold you back. So the reason why water is, the Torah is compared to water, is because just as water flows to the lowest place, the Torah is going to flow to you, but you have to humble yourself and be be an anav. Okay? The next one is besimcha. Besimcha is with simcha, with joy, with happiness. Listen, this is very straightforward. The Shechina is shori, it's dwelling on you when you're learning Torah, but the Shechina is not shori on someone who is not besimcha. The simcha here we mean is simcha shel mitzvah. That means the joy you're getting from learning itself. And I think that's really important here. It's important, A, you got to just be in a positive orientation. You got to be hopeful. You got to be optimistic. You got to be in good mood, because otherwise, essentially, your mind is small-minded. You're not open to new ideas, or interested in learning, and you're not being creative, and you're not retaining what you're learning because you're bogged down. But if a person is in good spirits, so then his mind is opened up, and he's open to new ideas, and he's open to thinking about them, and he's energized to work hard, to process things. So that's why simcha is essential. But more than that, the simcha has to be there because a person only learns mashlibo chafetz, what a person wants to learn. And it's a mistake to approach the Torah as simply as like a burden that you have to do, like sort of against your wishes or your better interests, God forbid, or something like that. You know, if the doctor says you need to get exercise, because you need to get exercise, we all do. So you're a fool if you think, you know what, I hate jogging, but I have to do it because that's the most efficient exercise I can do. I need to get exercise. That's a terrible idea. Why? Because you're not going to stick to it, because it's hard to jog. And if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it. It has to be, the exercise has to be its own reward if you're going to stick to it. So find out. Maybe you like pickleball. Maybe you like mountain biking. Maybe you like playing tennis. Whatever it is, you figure out what it's an exercise which is its own reward. And then naturally you'll come to do it again and again and again because you want to do it for its own sake. And then you'll get the exercise you need. And the same with Talmud Torah. If you associate Torah with hard work and misery, so then as much as you think it's the right thing to do, it's difficult to bring yourself to do it. You have to be besimcha in your learning, and your learning has to make you besimcha. So figure out what kind of stuff you do like learning, what kind of learning makes you excited, and the way that you learn which makes you feel most fulfilled and engaged, and pursue it in that way, because when you have that orientation to sort of exciting and enthusiastic about your learning, it's gonna go in better. You're gonna be able to cover more ground. You're gonna come back to it sooner. You're gonna want to do review on it. So tachlis, the simcha is an essential aspect for integrating Torah. I just want to remind you what I said in the very beginning that of this Mishnah, which is that although these are the 48 tools by which you integrate Torah, in retrospect, it's the Talmidei Chacham who can be differentiated and distinguished by their embodiment of these 48 traits. So that means you'll be able to pick out a proper Talmid Chacham who's getting the Torah if he lives besimcha, if he lives ba'anava, if he fulfills Shmiras Ozen, if he has Eman Yira, and so on. And that brings us to Beshimash Chachamim, serving the wise people. The idea here is that there's a lot more to learn from a Chacham than just the information he can tell you with his mouth. You also can learn a great deal from the way he comports himself, the way he behaves, the way he interacts with other people. And therefore, Chazal say you could learn even from the Sichas Chacham, like the idle chatter, mundane talk, there's plenty to learn. And therefore, the Mishnah is advising you to be Mishamesh. Now, Mishamesh essentially means to serve. The idea is, what does the Chacham want to have you lingering around? No rabbi wants you stalking him, right? So how are you going to make yourself useful? Make yourself useful and figure out a way to help him. And then you're being helpful to him, you know, giving a ride to the airboard or the shear or whatever, carrying his stuff back to his classroom, whatever the story is. That is going to afford you the opportunity to be useful and be in his presence and to learn from what he has to teach beyond just the words he has to say. Worth noting is that Rashi always learns that Shimsh Chacham means understanding their svaros. So when it says that the proliferation of the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai occurred because the students weren't mishamesh their Shammai Hillel properly, that is, they didn't plumb the depths of their svaros. So they didn't probe them for their understandings. Next, you have Bedikduk Chaverim, which means probing not your rabbis, but probing the matters with your friends. Dikduk, Ledakdek, means to be precise with your friends. The idea is, listen, when you're hearing a shir and you're getting from a teacher, of course there are certain things that need exploration, which you just can't do in the lecture or classroom setting, and it's not really appropriate to ask every nitpicky detail to your teacher necessarily. There's a place to discuss it with your friends and explore and discuss. And more than that, Chazal say that Ein Torah Niknes Ela B'Chabura. You only can acquire Torah with a group of people. Put your minds together, two heads better than one. You see different perspectives. And as Chazal said famously in Tainus, it's a Rabbi Chanina said, Harbor Lamadati Merabos. I learned a lot from my teachers, but Yoser M'Chabura. Umachavera yoser meravosai. But I learned even more from my friends. The idea is that you have a lot to gain from speak things out with your chavrusa, your friends, and the multiple perspectives bring out more than you have on your own. So that sort of give and take sharpens the mind. It it adds much more than you could get otherwise. So you need to not learn alone, but with chaver. Next, you have the pilpul hatalmidim, with the give and take of the students. The idea here, the word pilpul, like the word from the word pepper in English, which is, you know, adds spice or sharpen. The idea is that the questions that the students raise the teacher sharpens the teacher. And therefore, this advice, first of all, to teacher, this should make itself available to the students, ready to accept questions. And you know, seeing that the questions that the students raise sharpens the teacher, it sort of brings them to realize the things that isn't clear in his own mind, because they're the sounding board and they're reflecting the fact that he didn't get something or say something clearly. So first of all, you see that very same Rabbi Chanina and Tainus of Zion said, "Umitalmidai yoser mekulam," more than my teachers and my friends, I learn from my students. And Chazal described that the reason why Torah is compared to an eitz, as an eitz chaim hi, the word eitz can mean a tree, it can mean just simply wood. Because just as when it comes to, if you want to light a big log, a big piece of wood, you have to get little small wood chips that makes the kindling, which sets the big log on fire. So too, the big Talmud Chacham will sort of be lit up on fire and be sharpened by the questions of the little twig. So you need the junior students to raise, you know, to raise the questions, which sort of ignite the thinking process and the juices flowing of the teacher. Therefore, the students asking questions and being mefalpel to spice up the teacher is to everyone's benefit. Next, we have beyishuv, and in some girsal, some versions, it's beyishiva. Yishuv means like yishuv hadas. It means calmness. It means a clarity of mind. It means not feeling under pressure, taking one's time, not rushing to give answers. Hevum mesunu medin, said the mission, the very first mission of Avos, giving the time to think things out well and clearly. And simply means sort of to be like diligence, leaving no stone unturned, and not feeling rushed to sort of do a bakias when you should do an eon, a proper thing. Therefore, stay put in your learning. Don't be easily distracted. Don't move away too fast. Take your time. Retain your calm. Retain your relaxed state. And that is how you will learn properly. If the girsa is b'yeshiva, so that means you have to put in the hours sitting in the base of Midrash. You got to sit there and put in the hours to learn. Nothing comes easy. Nothing comes quick. And there's no shortcuts. No shortcuts. You got to find a way out of your home into the base of Midrash. Sit there with everybody else. Pay attention. Be present. And that's an essential ingredient. Just putting in the hours to gaining the Torah that has to be taught. Then you have b'mikra. Now, mikra means the Torah shebichsav, the written Torah. That is the 24 books of Tanakh. And a person simply has to be an expert in Tanakh to understand what the Torah say. That's the, you know, the base Elohim is built on the Tanakh. That's where the Torah comes from and is rooted. And therefore, a person needs to make it his business to not just be expert in Torah Shebaal Peh, but also Torah shebichsav. The Gemara says in Kedushin, the Rambam brings it lahalacha, the Shulchan Aruch brings it lahalacha. A person should divide his learning into three portions. Every day, a third Mikra, a third Mishnah, and a third Talmud. So a third of your learning should be dedicated to Mikra. And even though, I know, first of all, the Rambam says, yes, once you've mastered the Mikra, you know all the psukim, so then you can just review them from time to time. So good, God bless you. If you know all of Tanakh, you can then just review it from time to time. And yes, I know the Ramah says, based on the Zatosfos, that Talmud of Bavli is bolus, akol, it's all in there. But the truth is, I actually looked, I forgot the number now, but it was like, I think fewer than half of Psukim and Tanakh even have one mention in the Bavli. So it's not all in there. Don't kid yourself. And the Maral goes to town, how that's just a dodge. And really, of course, you need to have a firm basis in the Mikra and the Tanakh. And here it is in front of you, black and white. You want to acquire Torah, you have to have proficiency in Tanakh. Therefore, listen, when you're young, you can put a kid from 5 to 10, they should be learning all day. Psukim, you're older, it's probably boring. First of all, Shnai Mikra, the five books, that's Simon Reish Pei Hei of Orchaim, it's a din. Every week you got to do it, it's a halacha, so you should have proficiency going through the Chumash every year. parsha by parsha, each sidra. And in addition, make an effort to have learn a perikyomi, something, have some plan where slowly you're getting a familiarity with all the psukim, especially the less familiar psukim. After Nevi'im Rishonim, you got all the Nevi'im Achronim, you got all the Ksuvim, less familiar, but you need to have it if you want to have a Kinyan in Torah. Then you have B'mishnah. Now, Mishnah here means what we're doing right now, gaining a proficiency in the Mishnah. As it happens, this particular, what we'll learn now is a Braisa, but the idea is that, yes, ultimately, the Talmud and the process called Talmud is like the Spitz learning, but you need to have grist for the mill. You need to know the material, and the material is based in what Rabbi Nasi and his Bez in his time collected as being the canonical, definitive set of Torah Shebaal Peh, which you put in the Mishnah, and you have to know it. If you don't know the basic dinam of Sota and Egla Rufa and Avodah Zarah and Zavachim and Gittin, so then you're not ready. It's like learning Gemara without knowing your Mishnahs first is like going into a university library and reading academic journal entries and articles on your particular area of interest, macular degeneration of the eye, when you haven't done biology 101 and understand basic, eye anatomy and physiology. So what you're doing, reading some very technical thing. Every sugya in the Gemara is a very technical thing. It's a like an academic article on some specific topic. If you haven't mastered, the foundations of and principles of that particular topic, who are you kidding? Next you have miyut shena. And there's a number now of miyutim. In my gears, there are five different things that have to be mimaet. And some gearsos here, it's miyut schora comes first. Whichever it is, I'll go my version. I'll come back to schora later on. Miyut literally probably means minimize, but understand, it doesn't mean less is necessarily better. I would translate miyut, at least idiomatically, as either to limit or to optimize. That is to say, all the five things that there's a request to miyut here in my version, of miyut shena, limiting sleep, miyut sicha, limiting chit-chat, miyut tanug, limiting luxury and indulgence, miyut schok, limiting frivolity and joking around, and miyut derech eretz, limiting normal life activity, outside of, base of midrash. So all those things, they're all necessary. No, you're not going to survive life. You're not going to be a successful Talmid Chacham if you don't sleep, and you don't talk, you don't enjoy anything, you don't ever laugh, you don't do what has to be done to get through life. It's not going to work. But the point is, there's a bit of like a zero-sum game here. There's a tension between dedicating your time, your mental space, your resources towards these things, and your time spent learning and thinking about your learning. And therefore, the idea is you got to limit things and optimize. Optimize means you need to get as much as you need in the most efficient way possible. So in the least amount of time, you get the most amount of rest. So miyut shena means limit your sleep. Don't get more sleep than you need, but it does mean get as much sleep as you need. And probably in this generation, the year 2020, whatever, you're probably not getting enough sleep as it is. There's an epidemic of sleep deprivation, and people end up, looking on their phones and computers and whatever devices, which keep them up at night. So therefore, you need to get enough sleep so your brain can function optimally. And the halacha is, the Rambam brings it, a person needs about 8 hours. Modern science confirms people need 7 to 9 hours of sleep. You're probably getting less than 7 hours of sleep a night. It's not enough. Okay, so if you want to optimize your sleeping, the technique is go to bed at a fixed time every night. Be disciplined. And that will allow your body to sink into effective, restful sleep as soon as possible. You've all experienced what it means to be jet lagged or trying to go to sleep after you've been up all night. You see, you don't sleep well when you're not in the rhythm. So have a consistent time for going to sleep. If you want to work on limiting your sleep, start with 8 hours. If you see you're doing just fine 8, so then get up earlier. Don't go to bed later. Get up earlier and see how that works. But as soon as you find yourself unable to concentrate and able to focus, want to take a nap in the middle of the day, and the naps you need to take offset the amount of time you're gaining from sleeping at night, you've obviously gone too far. You're not getting enough sleep. So start with a solid 8 hours. That's a din. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Don't compare yourself to the people who have this enormous siyat deshmai, the Talmid Chacham, who are able to sleep 2 hours a night or 4 hours a night. And the truth is, there's actually a gene, a human gene in the population, 1% of the people have it, that allows people to sleep 4 hours a night. If you don't have the gene, you can't function. You cannot function on 4 hours of sleep unless either A, you have that gene, or B, you're zocha to extraordinary siyat deshmai, and don't kid yourself. Slowly, slowly till you get there. Okay? Also, You want a dark room. You want consistent patterns of sleeping. You want to not be drinking alcohol or caffeine close to bedtime, even 6 hours before bedtime. And don't kid yourself that alcohol helps you fall asleep. You do fall asleep. You pass out, but you sleep not well, not restfully. Okay? There is gemaras that say lo ivri laila el girsa, that the nighttime was only created for the sake of learning. And of course, there is a mitzvah of vigisa b'yom v'laila, to learn day and night. So you have to be kovei itim at nighttime as well. But in our modern age, I think your best bet is marav. You can learn a little bit, but depending on your lifestyle, you need to make sure that you get to bed at a reasonable hour so you're rested up and you can do your good learning in the morning. You'll do, if it's possible for you, your way better move is to get up early before work, before school, before whatever your obligations are, and learn ahead of time when your mind is fresh. Then at the end of the day, when you're daf yomi, you get 9 o'clock when you're falling asleep on your gemara. Next we got miut sicha. Miut sicha means to limit chit-chat. Sicha doesn't mean talking. It means talking about the game last night and the weather and what's going to be in politics and who's going to win. No, that's chit-chat. And listen, it's a zero-sum game. You got to minimize your schmoozing and your chatter, because the more time you spend small talking and chit-chatting away, the less time you're thinking about meaningful things. That's a mistake. So therefore, you should focus on not wasting your time discussing things that make no darn difference, and get back to focusing on learning. Don't forget the in the first parak we had of Avos that said, "Lo matzati tov leguf el eshtika." Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, "Nothing better for your body, even let alone your soul, than silence." So talk less, do and learn more. Next, you have miut ta'anug. The miut ta'anug means limiting your indulgence, your luxuriating. The thing is, listen, everyone needs a break, and sometimes you need to relax, sometimes you need to get into a hot bath, because yes. Like, same with sleep and same with chatting. You need a time. But the point is that it's very difficult for a person who's, like, indulgent to be able to sort of knuckle down and learn in a way that needs to be learned, right? Because, yes, part of learning means you're going to be a little bit hungry sometimes and you have to just push it off. And a little tired sometimes and push through it. And a little bit of a headache, but just keep on going. And if you're a softy and you're indulgent, you're just not going to have what it takes. Okay, so you got to toughen up. You got to, we talked about this hedonic cycle not long ago. You got to realize that your demands for physical comfort ratchet up. Once you're used to this level of a comfortable chair and this level of a comfortable pillow and this level of a comfortable lunch, this level of comfortable air conditioning, it's very hard to go back. And all of a sudden, you're like, I can't learn there. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's not, lighting is good enough. What's going to be? So therefore, just stop. Everybody who's listening, who's got the wherewithal to have a device which can play a recording, has a wherewithal already. Their lifestyle is good enough. You've got more than what the kings were living with 500 years ago. Just stop indulging and get back to work, because although there's a time and place for it, yes, you're not going to handle the rigors of real learning unless you sort of say, I don't need more stuff and comfort. I need more Torah. Next, you have miut schok. Now, schok means frivolity, levity, joking around. I want to contrast this with simcha, happiness. Don't forget, we had simcha as one of the 48 ways. You need to have simcha. But simcha is something that's pinimi, it's within you. To be upbeat, hopeful, optimistic, in good spirits, to feel good, that stuff is essential. But to be telling jokes and goofing about and, you know, being rambunctious, not so much. Now, there's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, talks about how there's a place even for schok. In fact, Rabbah, he would start every shir with a milsa bedichusa, like with a joke. Okay, that's fine. That gets the students into it. There's a place for a joke. We're not saying no joking. We're saying limit it, optimize it. So when it's necessary to get everyone excited and interested and open them up, okay, fine, then you can have a joke. But when it's time to be serious, stop goofing around and get down to what has to be done. Okay, next you have b'miut derech eretz. Now, derech eretz, which means the way of the world, means all of the things that human beings need to do to get through life. And that means Jew and non-Jew alike, the thing that people need. So that includes a number of different things, okay? Derech eretz includes earning a living, taking care of your body, relations with your wife, doing the shopping. And so Rashi learns that the pshat here of miut derech eretz means not hanging out with your buddies in the shuk. You understand? Because everyone has to go shopping, but you don't have to hang out at the mall. You can just do your business and come back. So there are different pshatim that focus on different angle, you know, aspects of that, but they're all included. The idea is that whatever you need to do to get through life, okay, do it, but then, you know, do it, has to get done, and then return back to your real focus, which is you want to master. If you want to get Torah, you got to focus on getting Torah. And therefore, we're saying, miut derech eretz means not to invest excessive time in marital relations, not to invest excessive time in earning a livelihood and, you know, working at the job. You don't have to work 60 billable hours a week to make partner. No, so you won't make partner. So, okay, yes, you only have one life to live. What do you want to do? Do you want to be a talmid chacham or you want to be a partner? You can't have both. That's the idea here. Okay, same thing. You're going to go, don't spend time hanging out, playing pool at the cafe, in the bar, at the mall, chilling. You got to just, there's a time and a place. Derech Eretz, yes, everyone needs to do their shopping and their chilling from time to time. But be mema'et, limited. Okay, same goes with, you know, all sorts of investment in the material world. Do you really need to go for a new car? Does it require shopping around? Does it require, you know, planning what new color you're going to paint your living room? I don't know about that. If you really, that's such an important thing to be invested in, leave it be. Okay, now, some Girasas authority have miut schora. If you have miut schora as one of your 48, that means limiting business. That means spending less time or limiting the amount of time you spend doing your buying and selling, your trading, whatever it is, in the you know, cut work a little early to go learn a little more, whatever the story is. So if you have that as one of your 48, then of course, miut derech eretz can't be referring to business stuff. It'll be then probably referring to marital stuff. Okay, then you've got erech apayim. Erech apayim means don't get quickly angered. Okay, so if it's talking about a teacher, it's easy to understand. Hill already said back in the second parak, lo ha-kaptan melamed, you can't be easily angered and frustrated if you're a teacher because the kids won't learn from you. They won't The students won't want to pay attention, won't listen, they won't be able to ask questions because they're afraid of what you're going to say. If it's talking about students, which it probably is, talking to each of us, you know, how are we supposed to be Kona Torah? So there are two basic approaches here. One is that being angry in itself is sort of inimical to absorbing Torah. It says whenever a person gets angry, essentially he forgets his learning. If he's a chacham, the chacham leaves him. So you just, angry people and talmid chacham shouldn't go hand in hand. Okay, that's a one basic approach. I think the other approach is a little different, but worth considering for a second, which is that if you're quick to take offense to your teacher, then it's going to be very hard to learn. You know, most kids, if they're not doing well in school, it's because the teacher doesn't like them, and you know the teacher they can't learn from this person because of, you know, one thing he said one time. So a guy can go to shir for 10 years. And be doing great. Then one time the teacher is having a bad day and says something which offends the person, he's never going back there again. Okay, but if you have that mahalach in life, you're going to run out of teachers very fast. So the idea is, you know, be slow to take offense to your teacher and what he has to say, because that will just undermine your ability to learn and have teachers. Good. Next you have belev tov. Lev tov means literally a good heart or being good-natured. The pashup shot of lev tov means that you're happy for other people to succeed, to do well, to have things. You have a positive disposition and orientation towards other people. So, meaning even if it's not good enough to simply just, you know, not get angry, which would be what you have in terms of Erech HaPaim, it's even inside you shouldn't be harboring resentment and negative thoughts and ill will. Obviously, if you're bogged down with those things, there's no place for you to, you know, to learn. The Derech HaPaim, that's the Maharal, says, you're not going to find Lo Timsa Torah Ela B'mishehu Tov. You won't find Torah unless in the place, except a good place, meaning a good heart, because ki lekach tov nasas lechem, the Torah is called good, and you have good things only belong in good places. So therefore, you can't envy people or begrudge people their success. You can't feel you're in competition with them in school. You got to be positive, and that general, you know, positivity will make you have the headspace for learning. If you are bogged down with all these negative thoughts, cynicism, frustration, negativity, anger, resentment. Okay, so then you're wrapped up with those problems. You have not got the free headspace and open heart to take in the Torah. Next, you have emunas chacham. Emunas chacham means trusting in what the chacham have taught us. So it doesn't mean me. It doesn't mean your local Orthodox rabbi necessarily. It means chazal. When chazal say something, you should believe what they say. Not to say they can't make mistakes. They could make mistakes, of course. But you have a mitzvah lo sasur and not to deviate from what the rabbis have taught us. It's a mitzvah. And the way that the Sefer Chinuch describes that, he says, listen, every time that something you learn makes sense, the rabbis say you already agree with what you knew, so you're not really listening to them at all, you're listening to yourself. Listening to them means, in those rare scenarios where they say something and you're like, really? I thought something totally else. So then, to go with them, because they're usually right, is having a munah in the rabbi. So the idea here is, when Chazal says something, you should assume it's carrying the weight of Torah Mesinai, and you should be receptive to it, and not cynical. I'm not saying you can't ask questions, but the point is, if you have this filter of mistrust and distrust and cynicism and to what Chazal is trying to teach you, so then, of course, by having this thick filter, so not all the Torah can get in as it should be. So therefore, trust Chazal's judgment, accept their discretion, and, you know, go with them. Don't fight them. Go with them. That's a good way to get Torah. Another way is definitely not a good way to Torah. Okay. Now, I'll say finally, because in my Mishnah here, actually, this Mishnah divides two halves. We're halfway through with this one, and it breaks to a second one, which is Kabbalas HaYisurim, accepting trials and tribulations, challenges, pain, suffering, hardship. The idea is, learning Torah is massive. It's so much work. It's going to require so much thought and sacrifice and dedication. It is going to be hard. Just accept it from the outset. You're climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Before you start on your hike, they tell you, listen, this is going to take 10 days. It's going to be cold. You're going to be tired. You're going to be uncomfortable. Your feet are going to hurt. Yes, yes, yes. Okay? So don't nag and don't whine and don't fetch and don't turn around because your feet hurt. If you want to climb the mountain, accept there's going to be pain and heartache, hardship. That's how it goes. Okay, so now let's get going. That is Torah. Torah is hard work. We don't schar mitzvah b'hai olam leka. You're not going to be, just because you're a Talmud Chacham or you're trying to be a Talmud Chacham, you're not going to miraculously be protected from hardship. You'll have hardship too, and your head's going to hurt, and you're going to get sick, and your kid's going to get sick, and your kid's head's going to hurt, and you're going, yeah. But just, okay, accept that. Don't sit around asking, how could Hashem do this to you, and where's the justice in it? Just listen, put that aside, accept it's going to be hard, and now gird your loins, accept that you're going to have to bear this hardship, this suffering, this discomfort, and push through. And that's the price you have to pay. If you're not prepared to pay that price, don't even bother starting to walk up the mountain, because you're just not going to get there.